diving right into it. Job is very confident about his life and that he's lived a righteous life and that he is justified to complain about his situation. Remember, his friends said, no, you're not justified. It's very logical to his friends. When you look at his friends, there really is no problem with the friends. The fact is, to them, Job's done something wrong. That's why Job's going through what he's going through. It's the whole sowing and reaping. This didn't happen by chance or just by accident. Job, you've done something wrong. Now, Job wants to argue his case. Go to chapter 9. He wants to argue his case before God. And one of the things that Job is going to say is that God, of course, is not like man. That's one of the things he's wrestling with. And he's going to go kind of back and forth with this. Almost like, you know, I'm going to be able to argue my case for God. And then there's this, but God's not a man like I am. How am I going to be able to bring this up to God? He's not going to understand me. In chapter 9, verse 30, let me get this thing on. Chapter 9, verse 30 and 33, Job says, if I should wash myself with snow, so he's going to talk about cleaning himself, of being pure, cleanse my hands with lye, yet you would plunge me into the pit and my own clothes would abhor me. That God isn't going to allow Job to get better. That God is going to allow him to be pure. And we understand as Job goes back and forth that he's speaking from anguish. Keep that in mind all throughout. He's speaking from his anguish. He's speaking from his sorrow. Notice verse 31. Yet you, verse 32. For he is not a man as I am that I may answer him. So there's his struggle there. How can I answer him? He's not a man as I am that we may go to court. There is no umpire between us who may lay his hand upon us both. So there he is wrestling with God and understanding God. And then we brought up that question, that one that I still to this moment not sure exactly all that Job is getting at. In chapter 14:14, when he said, if a man dies, will he live again? And I think when we look at this text, I think at the heart of this, Job wants vindicated. He wants his vindication. And we brought up a lot of conversation last week. I don't know if there's really much more to talk about this. I think we talked quite a while about it. So if you want to continue to study it, I encourage you to do that on your own. But I do want to share with you, I told you that McGuigan had some great comments in his book on Life on the Ash Heap, Job Fights God's Battle for Him. I want you, if you get a chance, get this book. It's a small little book. The way McGuigan breaks it down is really, really, really helpful. But I want you to listen to what he says about this area where Job, if a man dies, will he live again? And what we've been talking about for the last couple of weeks. Whatever else is true, McGuigan said, it is characteristic of Job that he feels more than one thing at one time. You almost hear, that's the up and downs that we've talked about. He says more than one thing at one time, as we often do in difficult circumstances. In chapter 14, verses 7 to 12, he says that humans die and that's the end of them. But in verses 13 to 17, he entertains the longing that we would die, but that God would keep him safe, that he would die, but God would keep him safe in death and call him back to life and vindicate him. That's our passage here. If a man dies, will he live again? Then verses 18 to 22, that daring wish. If the word hope is too strong for what he feels, is driven from him and despair bubbles back to the surface. Maybe something of that same ambiguity is felt in verses chapter 13, 15 to 16. He wants to argue his case with this unfair God, chapter 13, verse 3. because his friends are useless, chapter 13, 1 to 6. But even though he thinks God is unfair, he still feels in his bones that he, God, esteems truth, verses 7 to 12. It's that kind of conflict he's feeling when he says he will make his case before God, even though it is putting his life at risk, 13 to 14, verses 13 to 14. He says he thinks God will kill him, 15, first part of that verse, which says he thinks his case is hopeless, but even as he says that, it strikes him that maybe he won't, maybe he won't. If Job insists on making his case before God, trusting himself to God, maybe that will be his vindication. No obviously ungodly person would be eager to meet God and plead his innocence. And that's an a very good point to observe. You're not going to want to go before God if you know you're guilty in your own heart, right? So that says something about Job and his innocence. The fact that Job is anxious to do just that might persuade God that his servant has been faithful. But even that assumes God can be trusted to be and to do what is right, remembering that the man who dares to think this is disfigured, speaking of Job, and devastated. It is an incredibly noble thought. And McGuigan was referring back to chapter 13 and chapter 14 in those areas, and encourage you to go back and read through that. So Job feels like he somehow in his struggle he is going to be vindicated. The next mountain peak passage is this idea that Job says, I'm a dead man and God is the responsible one. And so go over to chapter 16. Chapter 16. While we're turning, is there any comments? Anybody want to share anything? Dave?
That's a good question. Part of the story, and we can tell from the things that Job's struggling with, he has a certain perception or idea of what God is like. But let's say, again, that it was one of the other guys, one of Job's friends, who's going through this as a righteous man, and is making the same claim. How would Job react? What would Job be saying? It's just an interesting thought.
Sure.
Of knowing that.
Sure.
Yes. He has a different understanding, a different perception of who God is than what he started out with.
That is part of the main part of this, well, the book, but this lesson too, that conflict that Job has in his mind now with God, because early on his view was just like his friends. Now, do we know whether or not Job would have had more compassion? We would hope to think so, but I don't know that. We don't, really. But that's something, another way to look at it.
Like we talked about, you know, he's saying, you're saying all the right things. But the problem is, I'm innocent.
Yeah.
You know, and they just don't understand that. They don't see that.
Yeah.
That can't possibly be, because that's not who God is. Because we know who God is. But they don't.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting thought there. Anybody else?
Yeah, I got a couple of thoughts. Back in chapter, James 1, or what, around verse 13, he says that God cannot be tempted.
Mm.
And then in Job 9, where he says there's no umpire between us, well, what was Christ? 1 Timothy 2:5.
Our mediator, our go-between.
So And the thought that Job says here, there's no one in 33 where he says there's no one between us that he may lay his hand upon us both. That was the purpose of Christ, to be able to let God understand, if I can put it that way, what man is feeling, seeing how God himself cannot be touched with the things of man.
And he's so far removed from...
Doesn't know the human... Well, he may know the human frailties, but he may not understand the sense of, you know, what Job is going through from Job's sense anyway.
That's a really good thought there.
And then, of course, you know, 14, I still think he's dealing with the physical.
Yeah.
He's got to be dealing with the physical.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the illustrations that he's using is true in his physical life. I mean, you cut down a tree, the tree can't spring back. But man, when he's cut down. But when you get to the part about that he has no vindicator, is that what Wiggins said? That he was saying that
he... No, that he would be vindicated. Well, he believed he would be vindicated.
Okay,
yeah.
That takes you to chapter 19.
Yeah.
And I don't want to get that.
And we will get a little bit into 19. And if I miss something, Ed, feel free to bring it up there too. Just don't take my whole class, brother.
Yes, sir.
No, your comment's really good. That's a real, when you think about God being so far removed from us and us, we need a mediator. And yet that's who we have in Jesus, the man Jesus. God sent him here for the very reason that we would, one reason that he could explain who God was. And that he could also mediate for us between God, because we could not come before God without him.
And a Hebrew writer put out that he'd be able to help us in a time of need.
Mm. Really good point. That'd preach right there. Chapter 16, verses 11. So the idea, I'm a dead man, God's responsible for this. And verse 11, notice... Let's just read some of this. Listen to what Job is saying. We can't read all of it, but we'll read through verse 22. God hands me over to ruffians and tosses me into the hands of the wicked. I was at ease, but he shattered me. He has grasped me and he has grasped me by the neck and shaken me to pieces. He has also set me up as his target. His arrows surround me without mercy. He splits my kidneys open. He pours out my gall on the ground. He breaks through me with breach after breach. He runs at me like a warrior. I have sewed sackcloth over my skin and thrust my horn in the dust. My face is flushed from weeping, and deep darkness is on my eyelids, although there is no violence in my hands. And my prayer is pure. O earth, do not cover my blood, and let there be no resting place for my cry. Even now, behold, my witness is in heaven, and my advocate is on high. My friends are my scoffers, my eye weeps to God. Oh, that a man might plead with God as a man with his neighbor. And that's what he wants to do. He's going to get that chance. Verse 22, for when a few years are past, I shall go the way of no return. So there you have it. There's the last idea of the mountain peak passage. Obviously, Job again struggling, as has been brought up, with God. Almost sometimes you get this idea that Job, almost like a new God has been introduced to the life of Job. There's this conflict with the old God and now who God really is to Job. And can that be true of us today when we're in those moments of unavoidable suffering and sorrow, whatever that may be? Do we wrestle sometimes with God that, you know, we say the things like, how can God let this happen to me? This is not the God that I fully understand. And so, anybody have a thought there? I think this is part of what Job is really battling with here. Phyllis?
Well, when things don't go the way we think they should, then we don't start to doubt whether God really is in control of everything.
Okay, this is a different concept of God and what He has been. That's good. Anybody else? Job will continue to plead over and over again for this hearing. He wants God to hear him. I want you to look at, go over to chapter 19. And we will in just a moment. We're not going to read these verses right away. But one verse that really, I think, that opened my eyes in chapter 19 to Job's feeling here is in verse 23 when he says, "Oh, that my words were written." I mean, just let's think of Job's situation and what he's saying. "Oh, that my words were written." And we don't, everything that I read, he's not talking of, they don't believe he's talking about the book of Job. He wants his words inscribed. He wants his situation written down so that this idea of having a court record or some kind of transcript to prove his case. "Oh, that my words were written. Oh, that they were inscribed in a book." I mean, Job is adamant about this. Again, about his suffering unjustly, that he wants this documented. And again, does this sound like a guilty man to you? Doesn't to me. And in Job's eyes, and rightfully so at the time, we know that he is innocent. That what he's going through is not something he deserved. We understand that. But I was thinking to myself, why does he really want it recorded? And what would your thoughts be? Why do you think Job wants this recorded so bad? Why would he say, "Oh, that my words were written. Oh, that they were inscribed in a book"? What comes to your mind?
Possibly he wants his whole life written and not just this time of trial.
Okay.
Job seems to be pretty proud of his existence before all this happened. I don't say he was arrogant. I just think he felt like he had lived a decent, honorable life before God.
Okay. I have heard it also said by some that perhaps Job, well, he knows he believes he's going to die. He believes he's leaving shortly. I mean, it's the end for Job, and that he isn't going to be alive to share this. He's not going to be alive to bring this about. And some have said that. Now, in ancient times, I read that the best way that they would preserve something was to engrave it in a rock. Stone, for that matter, and of course, if that wears in time through the years, the message is still there. You're not going to wear down a rock very quickly, are you? So, Job wants this thing engraved for the world to know. And again, he's struggling in every way man can really struggle, physically and spiritually. The physical is very obvious. I think the spiritual is the discussion we've been having a little bit this morning with God. That he is clearly wrestling with God, trying to square away in his suffering mind the concept of who God really is now. He's not sure. He doesn't really know. And he's having a hard time getting over, and he doesn't really, for a while, get over how his view of how he's being treated unfairly. Look at verses 23 to 27. Let's read this. He says, "Oh, that my words were written. Oh, that they were inscribed in a book, that with an iron stylus and lead they were engraved in the rock forever. As for me, I know that my Redeemer lives, and at the last he will take his stand on the earth." And we've had this, Ed and I have had this discussion here too, of what exactly Job, his view of his Redeemer and him being his Redeemer. I don't know all that Job understood about this. "But at last that he will take his stand on the earth, even after my skin is destroyed, yet from my flesh I shall see God." Job says that from his flesh he will see God. "Whom I myself shall behold, and whom my eyes will see, and not another. My heart faints within me. And we'll stop there. So some very revealing things from Job. Any thoughts here before we move on to our next?
Talking to his friends, right?
Yes. Okay.
He's talking to his friends.
Well, yes. Before...
I know you don't want to go on to like 29, but then you will know that there is judgment. Isn't he saying that to the friends? Who's the you?
Well, in here, Job, this is Job, in verse 8, in chapter 18, he's just finished his speech with Bildad. So... it's in reference to the speeches, but he's crying out, I believe in 19, to God, because he responds, how long will you torment me? Well, yes, he is in the beginning of 19, he is speaking to his friends, crying out because of his friends. So yes, you're right.
Okay.
You're right.
Well, I think that's why he wants the words recorded, so that when all is said and done, he gets his moment to say, see?
I was right.
Redeemer, my version says defender, he's going to defend me.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be here, and my defender is going to sit here, and we're going to pull this rock out that I wrote everything on, and see, nanny, boo-boo, I was right.
nanny, boo-boo, I'll put that up on my next PowerPoint slide next week.
Well, Joe has kind of a sense of humor.
Yes. Yeah.
He has a sense of humor. Shut up and let me talk, and then go ahead, keep mocking me.
Yeah.
He's kind of a witty, funny guy.
Job was clearly an intelligent man and a wise man. Good comments. Anybody else? We're going to move on from what we call the Mountain Peak passages, and we're going to have a little fun here. Obviously, we all know that if we would be no different than Job. So... but we have to remember that Job wasn't written for Job, was it? It's not for Job. It's for you and it's for me. It's for the readers. It's for the people who would eventually take this book and read it and learn from it. And Job, you don't realize this, but you know, some of the greatest songs that have ever been written have been written by what kind of people? People that lives are just wonderful, you know, maybe in time they became wonderful because of their, or they thought they were because of their prosperity. But some of the greatest writings, some of the greatest songs, some of the greatest poems were written by people who were in what? The worst moments of their life. I see that in Job. You don't realize it, but Job was a great songwriter. He was. And you're going to hear some of these songs from Job. And of course, we've all done it. We've all in our own lament sang our own song. And some of them sound alike for all of us. And we're going to see this with Job. One of Job's hit songs, song number one, is called Memories. Right? Anybody sang that song before? Absolutely. We all have, haven't we? In our low moments, where do we go? When life isn't what we want it to be now, where do we go? Back to our memories. Back to the early years. Back to the years of our youthfulness. Back to the years of our what we thought were our blessings or whatever else. And that's what Job is doing. As a matter of fact, in chapter 29. Go over to chapter 29. The way things used to be. That's Job's song. That's what Job is going to sing for all of us. And what he does is Job reveals three things in this song about the way things used to be. And it's very interesting when you break it down this way and you think about it in this light. Number one, Job goes back in his memories to the old days, to the way God had blessed him. His prior life was an absolute blessing. Remember, in the very beginning, we see that account where it says that there was a hedge around Job. God is pampering him, right? Satan even brought up that the hedge was around him, that you've protected him all these years and just showered all the blessings on him. So Job's going back in his song to those days, chapter 29, verses 2 and 3. Oh, that I were as in the months gone by. There it is. The good old days. As in the days when God watched over me. God's not watching over me any longer. When his lamp shone over my head, and by his light I walked through darkness. That is amazing what Job is saying. He's also going to bring out not only that God had blessed him, but also that everybody in his life, remember his influence. We're going to read some stuff in a moment that I don't remember going over before about what Job says about himself. But now he's looking back, reminiscing, remembering in his song, Life Before, and how everybody respected him. He's not respected anymore. I don't really know why he wasn't respected because he's suffering. Perhaps the view of that day of why people go through that. Maybe that's why he was detested now. He was no longer respected by his friends. Look at verses 7 through about 10. When I went out to the gate of the city. Just think about this for a minute. What Job is saying. When I went out to the gate of the city, when I took my seat in the square, the young men saw me and hid themselves. The old men arose and stood. The princes stopped talking and put their hands on their mouths. The voice of the nobles was hushed, and their tongue stuck to their palate. Job's talking about himself and how he was viewed and how he was respected. Now, sometimes when I read this, I can't help think that there isn't a little bit of, you know, from Job here. Job, he was a great man. As great as they were, he knew it. And he's saying that. So here he is, memories, God blessed me in my past, everybody respected me, but now he's like Rodney Dangerfield, right? Remember Rodney Dangerfield? I get no respect, right? That's what he used to say all the time. But thirdly, he says, in those days I could help. I can't help anymore. Job is so sick, he can't do anything for anybody, including himself. Verse 11, for when the ear heard, it called me blessed. When the eye saw, it gave witness of me, because I delivered the poor who cried for help and the orphan who had no helper. Job was a remarkable man. Just remarkable. The blessing of the one ready to perish came upon me, and I made the widow's heart sing for joy. I put on righteousness, and it clothed me. My justice was like a robe and a turban. I was eyes to the blind and feet to the lame. I was a father to the needy, and I investigated the case which I did not know. I broke the jaws of the wicked and snatched the prey from their teeth. And let's stop there, but he goes on and on, talks about that. So he's going back and he's just reminiscing. Now there are some that think Job here is being a little bit high on himself, maybe even a little proud there, and looking at how great his life is. So, any comments before we move to the next song? You ever sang this song? Sitting on a shelf, feeling sorry for myself. I have many, many times. Anybody have a comment, though? I saw someone's hand on the last point before we move. Yes.
So then we're talking about princes and nobles stopping. If he was that great, where the Bible uses it, they would stop.
Yep.
I mean, he was revered by everybody.
Yes. Yes.
And how the mighty have fallen. I mean, that's what they're thinking.
Wow, he must have really messed this thing up.
This is not one secret sin. There's got to be lots of them. Somebody had their hand up.
When it mentions he set up a gate, my understanding of setting the gate is where they made decisions and stuff, or judges and so forth. So evidently he must have been a man of prestige.
Yes.
You know, where he was maybe in that home of some part of the decision making.
Yes. He had a big vote.
Yeah.
Yes. Good.
Mm-hmm. He says that they did not talk about God like Job did.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they didn't show God the true respect and deity that he deserved.
Yes.
And Job did, although Job had something going on that he shouldn't.
Sure. Good.
I mean, and don't we always like to see a good person come down off their...
Oh.
You know, we go, oh.
Yeah, here's Mr. Greatness. Where is he now? You know?
we've coveted his position. I mean, people have, even his friends, his so-called friends, they're coming down. I mean, it's human, you know,
yes.
We all want,
yeah.
We don't praise people when they do good.
Yeah.
I'm glad you got a new car.
Yeah.
You're thinking, man,
you got,
I wish I could have one. You know, it's human, it's just in our, that we want people to fail, I think.
Yeah, and that's not good.
No.
It's the struggle we have of course, we're getting into a little different stuff, but the hard issues that we can develop of jealousy and envy and those other things of the flesh that are not good. They're not good for us at all. So here is sitting on a shelf, and I've sang this. I've written this before. I wrote the song, you know. Sitting on a shelf feeling sorry for myself, and that's the song that Job is singing in chapter 30. Now, here's the interesting comparison. What he has said in the song of memories of looking back to his past and all the ways God has blessed him, this song, feeling sorry for myself sitting on a shelf here, or other way around, you get it, but is the complete opposite of his prior life of blessing. Exactly the opposite. When you look at chapter 30, verse 19. He is no longer blessed in his mind. God does not bless him. Verse 19, chapter 30. And we're going to look at several passages. Verse 19, he has cast me into the mire, and I have become like dust and ashes. A ruin. And there's a lot of verses like this. This isn't just one. Look back at verse 1. Remember how the younger treated him before, but now listen to him. Listen to what he says now. But now those younger than me mock me, whose fathers I disdained to put with the dogs of my flock. Look at verse 9. And now I have become their taunt. I have even become a byword to them. They abhor me and stand aloof from me, and they do not refrain from spitting at my face. Wow. What a change of events. One of the most respected men, to now the youth are disrespecting him and spitting in his face. Another point that you'll hear in this song, others don't, well, we see it here, right there, that others are not respecting him, but also that Job can't help anybody anymore. That's his problem. Verse 24 of chapter 30. We're gonna have to go through this quickly. But yet does not one in a heap of ruins stretch out his hand? That's what I used to do, but now I can't. Or in his disaster, therefore cry out for help? That's all he can do now. Have I not wept with the one whose life is hard? Was not my soul grieved for the needy? So that might, your question a while ago of how Job might respond, we don't know exactly, but there's some insight here. I mean, he was there for those that were crying out for help and those who were struggling. So let's do this. Job ends his defense by placing some dares and curses on himself. Chapter 30,
Let's read through these, and I want you to just listen here. Job is all, it's like he's betting on his own life. Like you've said before, you know, I bet my life on it. And that's where Job is at. If I'm wrong, then let these terrible things come upon me. Verses 5 through, let's read verses 5 through 10. They are driven from the community. Oh, this is chapter 31. I'm in the wrong chapter. Verses 5 to 10. If I have walked with falsehood and my foot is hastened after deceit, let him weigh me with accurate scales and let God know my integrity. If my step is turned from the way, or my heart followed my eyes, this is verse 7 of chapter 31, or if any spot has stuck to my hands, let me sow and another eat, and let my crops be uprooted. If my heart has been enticed by a woman, or I have lurked at my neighbor's doorway, may my wife grind for another and let another kneel down over her. He's being pretty serious here. If you back up and you look at verse 1, he said, I have made a covenant with my eyes. How then could I gaze at a virgin? Perhaps his friends are saying, maybe Job's been into some sexual problems here, some sexual sins. Job's saying, no. No, I have not. Verse 13, listen to what he says. If I have despised the claim of my male or female slaves when they filed a complaint against me, what then could I do when God arises? And when he calls me to account, what will I answer him? Did not he who made me in the womb make him, and the same one fashion us in the womb? And then 21 and 22, and we'll wrap it up. If I have lifted up my hand against the orphan because I saw I had support in the gate, let my shoulder fall from the socket and my arm be broken off at the elbow. Let these bad things happen to me if this is what I have done. That's what Job is. That's really what Job is saying. So here's what he'll do. We're going to read one more passage and then we're done with the lesson. Job, go over, well, we're in 31. Go to 35. Job is going to say here, basically, I have signed the affirmative. Now it's God's responsible to sign the negative, and I'm ready to do this thing. I'm ready to get after it. I'm ready to talk about this thing with God, and I want every daily desert newspaper. Of course, there weren't newspapers, but I want it broadcasted. I want everybody to know about this debate. Chapter 31, verse 35 to 37. Oh, that I had one to hear me. Behold, here's my signature. Let the Almighty answer me, and the indictment which my adversary has written, surely I would carry it on my shoulder. I would bind it to myself like a crown. I would declare to him the number of my steps like a prince. I would approach him. What are your thoughts before we wrap it up? Like a prince, I will approach him. Yes, he did. Yes, he did. And he's going to get his opportunity. Isn't he? All right, that's all we have. Thanks for your time, your comments. We're dismissed. Him like a prince.